Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I am a former middle school teacher. I'm a current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so we often talk about things like project-based learning or design thinking, inquiry-based learning, big ideas of how to transform our classrooms. But sometimes we talk about little things that can make a big difference when they're done well. And today we're going to talk about journaling. That's right, like notebooks, journals, those composition books with the black and white speckles. Yeah, that's what we're going to be talking about today. So, little background, little story. When I was in the fifth grade, I kept a journal for a class. My teacher would give us 15 minutes to write whatever we wanted. I mean, this was stream of consciousness style writing. And I generally wrote about the Giants and baseball, and pretty much that was it every single time. I might write about something else. I might get into politics on occasion, but really, it was my chance to write about baseball. And I loved these 15 minutes. These were like 15 minutes of freedom. They felt like a break from school, like we were somehow getting away with something that we weren't supposed to do. Now, fast forward 7 years, and it's my senior year of high school. And in Miss Waller's history class, we have an interactive notebook. And it was a place where I could find my voice and wrestle with what I believed about the world. Yes, there were assignments attached to the journal, but it was so much more than that. There were so many different ideas that I put in there, political cartoons and essays I wrote and all kinds of stuff. It basically was my world spelled out in ink. Again, I fell in love with the journaling process. I drew these political cartoons and sketches of ideas. I made webs of concepts and ideas. I would create flowcharts that some of them were ironic and maybe even a little funny, and some of them were seriously trying to make sense out of systems in our world. Often I wrote lines of poetry or stream of conscious opinion pieces that I later revised and wrote for our student newspaper. Even though I wasn't part of the editorial staff, I could submit things, and I would, to Mr. Pfeiffer. My journal felt deeply personal and eminently creative. It was a space where I found my voice. I remember Miss Waller, she would leave all of her comments on sticky notes, and it was as if she was saying to us, "This is your space. Thank you for letting me add my thoughts in a temporary way, but I recognize that this is yours." Now, that year changed my world forever, for a lot of different reasons. But one of the minor ways was that it got me into the habit of keeping a journal. I've spent most of my life keeping a journal. It's a critical part of my creative process. Whether it involves writing a story or helping build a technology platform or sketching out ideas for research at the college level, whatever it is, I journal, like, often. Maybe not daily, but pretty darn close to that. It's also where I reflect on how things are going and where I remind myself of what matters. It is a nonstop dance between curiosity and creativity, between big abstract ideas and concrete realities, between dreams and plans. That's basically what my journal is. I mention this because I've seen people mock student journals. I've seen people say things like, you know, turning in a notebook is nothing like the way things work in the real world, you know, or I myself remember criticizing student blogging as being nothing more than digital journaling if we're not careful. Journals and notebooks, whatever you want to call them, they can feel pretty old school and maybe even archaic. But when implemented well, journaling can tap into curiosity and spark creativity. Journals are an example of a vintage tool that can actually spark innovation. The privacy and immediacy helps create a low-risk environment to just play around with ideas. And the lack of options, right, the lo-fi tech of all of it, that pushes us to think creatively and engage in visual thinking. That's why I love journaling. If you think about it this way, with a click of a button, I can send my work to the world, and this can feel empowering. I'm right now publishing a blog post. I'm recording a podcast. I have sketch videos that I have on YouTube. I love getting to share my voice with an authentic audience. I tap a screen and suddenly my ideas have reached the potential for a global audience. And within hours, I can gauge the success of my work by just looking at page views and social shares. But what if that's not always ideal? True, audience matters. I mean, I wrote a book called Launch, but so does solitude. And there's power in disconnecting and sharing art with nobody else except yourself. Creating it for an audience of one. See, when I'm publishing to the world, I'm thinking about how my work will be perceived. And that's a good thing. It can make me more empathetic. It can help me clarify my thinking. It's eminently human and social. But in my more insecure moments, which happen more frequently than I'd like to admit, I want people to love what I made. I'm sharpening my ideas, I'm reshaping my words, and if I'm not careful, I become risk averse. I become afraid to create something and share it with others. I start caring too much about what other people think. And that makes me less creative. But when I'm alone, I can make mistakes, big mistakes. Nobody knows, nobody cares. And this is why I journal. My journal is a forest filled with scribbles and sketches and wild ideas sprouting out everywhere. I can go anywhere and nobody knows. I can dance and sing and yell. I can wander and wonder. I can take a creative plunge into the unknown, and everything is an experiment. Now that's the power of journaling. It's this secluded space of creativity. And this space, as lo-fi and personal and constrained as it may be, is the exact thing I need to take creative risks. See, when I journal, I have fewer choices, but I have more freedom. It's a blank white page, and I can do with it whatever I want. So how do we get the most out of creative journals? Well, there are no rules or formulas or recipes for the perfect student journals. And that's kind of the point. A journal is like a playground for the mind. It's a messy sandbox where you get to make and explore. But there are a few things that have worked for me, both as a maker and as an educator. And I want to share some of these ideas. Now, some of these ideas also are things that I've observed with other teachers. I get the chance to be in classrooms all the time as a professor. I get to talk with former colleagues, and I used to spend a lot of my prep periods going out and visiting teachers to borrow, aka steal, ideas. So this is not just coming from me. These are ideas from a lot of cool stuff I've observed from others. But here we go. Here are five ways to get the most out of creative journals. Number one, choose an audience of one. The cool thing about writing for yourself is you can be bold. You can make glorious mistakes that nobody sees. You're not shipping it anywhere. So jot down ideas of things that sound crazy. Collect your scraps of thoughts on a novel that seems ridiculous. Often the dumbest ideas become your favorite creative work. I remember sketching out visuals for what I wanted in an education book, and it felt drastically different from a visual perspective than any other teacher book I'd seen. But when I showed these ideas to my friend and co-author, AJ Giuliani, he looked at the sketches and he said, "Let's make this the style for Empower." And I remember thinking, "Are you kidding me? This looks nothing like the normal education book." And he pushed my thinking and he said, "Absolutely, let's do it." Another time I began writing out a story. I had these fragments written out along with character sketches and a general outline. And it seemed too silly as a story to actually share with an audience, but I went ahead and I wrote it and I refined it and I shared it with my kids as a bedtime story when they were little. And that became the book, Wendell the World's Worst Wizard, that I co-wrote with my wife. I'll be re-releasing it sometime in the next few months. I'll be doing an audiobook, just a heads up. Super excited about that project. Another time I drew out the UX and UI for a student-centered blogging platform, and it didn't seem feasible, and I didn't know enough about how to code it and all of these things, and yet I later ran into two other people, and together we created the platform Writeabout. Now, the same trend is true of student journals. They need to begin from a place of true ownership. Let them choose the topics, the length, the style, the approach. Treat it less like an assignment and more like a tool that you use to improve your creativity and tap into your curiosity. For example, in an inquiry-based research project, students might take notes or create sketch notes in their journals. In a design thinking project, they might use it to generate questions, process their research, sketch out their initial ideas, and reflect on their process. Or they might just do a daily free write and use it to jot down some key ideas as they read a novel. But the more it feels personal and authentic, the more likely they will use journaling as a process, not just in their class, but in their lives as well. All right, number two, use it for more than just words. This is the idea that journals should have sketches. Doodle wherever you want. Draw arrows, make diagrams, create little icons. The beauty of a journal is in the simplicity of the medium. You're not constrained by a complex user interface. The lack of options makes a plain canvas for a creative work. And as a teacher, you can ask students to try out mind mapping or sketchnoting. You might ask them to sketch out phenomenon or an organism that they see in science. And that process of sketching helps them improve their ability to observe. They might create their own flowcharts or graphic organizers to make sense of new ideas in math or history. They might draw cartoons or create comic strips to process ideas from language arts. But it doesn't have to stop there. You might incorporate elements of interactive notebooks and have students cut out items and tape them into it. Now, I never did this myself as a teacher. It just seemed like too tough to do logistically, but I've seen some really cool interactive notebooks where students have little flipbook elements and they have different visuals that pop up and it's dynamic and it moves and it's creative. They might paste in a random article and make blackout poetry in the style of Austin Kleon. The point is, a notebook doesn't have to be a device or something linear and text only. It can be a visual and connective device as well. By working within the constraint of a journal, you can use paper, pens, pencils, colored pencils, scissors, glue, tape, whatever you need to create something entirely new. All right, number three, create your own organizational strategy. Journaling is inherently a dumping ground for ideas, but it's also a space where ideas grow and expand. But that makes it sound passive. It's something highly interactive. It's not just a diary with words that come out. A journal is where you might plan projects or write poetry, craft stories, reflect on how things are going. It's where you might keep lists. I love to have a space where I keep track of podcasts I want to check out or books I want to read or random topics I want to study. That's a lot of different stuff. That's basically a total chaotic mess. And because journaling is so messy and multifunctional, people often create their own organizational structures. For example, I have an area for entirely new ideas. It's a space for video ideas and podcasting ideas, book ideas, lesson ideas, project ideas. You get the idea. Sometimes the space is a web. Sometimes it's more linear. It's a list with numbers and whatnot. But the sole function is to capture ideas that of things I want to make. But I also have an area for practical stuff. When I'm doing a specific project, I find myself thinking about practical things that need to be done. So I have a space in my journal called Crap That Needs to Be Done. And it's just where I jot down things so I don't forget to move them to my to-do list. I add to that list so I won't get distracted while I journal. I have a specific spot for things I want to check out. Topics, books, movies, journal articles, TV shows, podcasts. And it's all basically a list of recommendations from other people that I don't want to forget. And it's not inherently creative. It's basically tapping into my curiosity. I have a space for questions that I want to look at. Now, for what it's worth, I realize that I will never answer every question. I will never read every journal article, watch every movie. You get the idea. But this is a space where I can just keep those things in mind so that when I hit a creative block or when I'm not sure what to do or where to go, I can go check it out. In addition to these separate spaces, I have an organizational strategy. So I have differentiated spaces in my journal, and then I also have an organizational strategy. I number each page of my journal, and I keep an index in the back of my journal so I can go back and look and easily check things out. I use sketch icons to create visual organizational cues that help me figure out where things are. But I've seen other people use other structures. I've seen people use a left side, right side process. They might have words on one side, pictures on the others, or notes on one side, reflections on the others, input, output, you get the idea. I know of a person who uses colored pencils and colored pens, and this person color codes titles based on themes. She uses the colored lines and underlines to signal the purpose of the writing, and then she might actually use the color of the text to determine what she thinks about it, and it's all connected to images and icons and colors. As a classroom teacher, it helps to expose students to these types of organizational strategies. If possible, see if you can borrow journals with multiple styles and ask students which approach fits them best. You might be able to find some videos where artists and authors and engineers talk about their approach to organizing their journals, but the key is to let them figure out their own approach. To do, as Fleetwood Mac would say, go your own way. I've seen teachers require a specific table of contents, a numbering system, and it becomes a rigid format you follow, and that's not what you want. What you want is for students to find their own organizational style, because that process of determining an organizational style helps with analytical and systems thinking, and it builds metacognition. All right, number four, go cheap. Now, this is something that people are going to disagree with me vehemently. I know this, I get it, but I'm going to share it. I remember buying an amazing Moleskine journal, and I couldn't touch it. When I wrote something, it was stilted. I didn't doodle anywhere. Even my handwriting changed. It became quasi-legible instead of messy. Now, this is the same phenomenon I experienced when I was a kid, and I would get a fancy art kit and nice paper. Suddenly, I couldn't sketch anything at all. I know of many avid journalers who would disagree with me on this point, but I think it helps to have a cheap notebook. I do. I get it that people love quality journals, and they geek out on the paper type, and they're fiercely loyal to a particular brand, but to me, that's not me. I like cheaper journals. I will say this, I am fiercely loyal to Uniball pens, like I really care what kind of pen I have, but the idea is to create something that reduces risk aversion, to make your journals on some level cheap, to give yourself the permission to use as much as possible. The go cheap concept is not really about the materials that you use. It's about giving yourself the permission to put things on the journal that might feel dumb or half-baked or not great. I mean, you get the idea. If you say I'm not an artist, you can still sketch in your journal because nobody is going to see it, and the journal is inherently cheap, right? It's not going anywhere. You can use up as much space as you want. You can fill things out as much as you want. It's not a big deal. They're meant for first drafts and pre-drafts. And as a teacher, this also means reducing student fear and risk aversion. It might mean that you use some cheaper journals, and that's okay. It might be cheaper materials, but it also involves making the process cheap. And this is what I mean. Make journals a pass-fail assignment. Give people credit for just doing it, or make them entirely optional. You might say, I'm going to look at your journal, but I'm not grading the content. But whatever you do, by making it cheap, you give students the permission to basically have things that are imperfect, right? They don't have to check their grammar. They don't have to check spelling. It's okay. It's just a journal. All right, number 5, make it a habit. Journaling is a habit for me. But it didn't start out this way. It began as a habit that was formed in school and then continued into college. There was the sense that it was mandatory in Ms. Waller's class. And we had to write in our journals every day. Now, I keep the same habit right now. And I actually have a flowchart where I have, should I write today? And then under that, I have, do I feel inspired? And then on the yes side, it leads to keep writing. And then on the no side, it leads to keep writing as well. And here's what I mean about making it a habit. Too often we wait to be inspired in order to start our creative work. But inspiration doesn't work like that. It's not something that happens to you. It's something that you create. It's the result of hard work and effort. That's what inspiration is. It's not that inspiration isn't real. It's that inspiration is permanent. You are inspired when you feel inspired, but also when you don't feel inspired. It comes from the depths of who you are and what you believe. It's what drives you to work even when you are uncertain and afraid. When people say, I'm not inspired today, what they often mean is I'm afraid or I'm scared or I'm tired, but you have to work through that. Whether you're an artist or a writer or an engineer or a designer, the best thing you can do is show up and get crap done. If you have a purpose, then you have inspiration, whether you feel like it or not. And in the same way, students will use their journals more often when it becomes a daily classroom habit. The process doesn't need to be laborious. You can set aside a short 5-minute or 10-minute segment for student journaling. And it can be structured, it can be unstructured, you can have some mandatory assignments, you can have some free writes, but the idea is to make it, if not a daily habit, at least a common habit. It can help to ask students to keep their journals with them for experiments and projects and assignments. I pretty much carry around my journal everywhere I go. I've learned that it can seem rude to bust out a laptop in a meeting or to look at your phone, but a journal, well, geez, it looks like you're being studious and old school. I love having my journal. In the classroom, it can help to ask students to carry the journals around with them in multiple subject areas and throughout multiple kinds of lessons. Help them see that a journal is a tool that you can use anywhere at any time. It is the perfect mobile device because it will never run out of batteries. My final thought is this. Just go out and buy a notebook as a maker and a creator, which is part of what it means to be a teacher. If you do your own personal teacher genius hour, use a notebook and make this a habit. Get a cheap composition book or go out and buy a fancy Moleskine. I don't really care. It's up to you. And find a few decent pens and then have fun. Run wild. It's your playground. Have fun with it. Thank you for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you share it with somebody else on social media? And would you leave a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, whatever it's called right now, and Stitcher? Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day. And go out and make something awesome.